Osiris.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Hello, folks. Welcome back to the Best Show Ever podcast, the podcast about the best concerts that folks have ever seen in their lives. I'm your host, Cam Hurt, and you have come to the end of season two. This is the final finale week of season two, and we've got two great episodes out for you right now. One of those being with bass extraordinaire and national kicker of asses, Karina Reichman. Definitely go check that episode out. But the episode that you're watching right now is with a guy who I'm very lucky to get to speak with. You may recognize him from Hulu's The Bear, one of the best TV shows, if not the best TV show out right now. You may recognize him from Netflix's Love. You may recognize him from Larry David's Curb Your Enthusiasm. You may recognize him from the progressive Becoming Your Parents commercials. I'm talking with improviser, comedian, actor, huge Fish fan, Chris Witoski on this episode. And it was just awesome to get to talk with Chris. Chris has done a career that I am aspiring to as well. He started off in Chicago. He's from the Chicago area, did Second City and did the main stage there. We do get into that in this episode. And he quite honestly has one of the craziest Fish stories that you could ever possibly hear. To be in my opinion, maybe the craziest Fish story you could ever tell. Chris is the owner of. He's a fantastic actor. He's a fantastic comedian. He's a great improviser, and he's become a great resource and friend here in California for me, helping me out with what I'm doing in the acting world. And then just we've met up to talk about Fish. And recently, this past weekend, he took me to the Friday show at the Sphere, and we had like the best night of my life. I will at some point know how to talk about that show, and I'll know how to verbalize what that experience was like. But Chris was too kind in helping me get in the door on Friday. We had just the time of our lives, so much so that this episode is coming out late. Yeah, we're going to do this episode released on Wednesday, not Tuesday. I had all my equipment with me. I had all the ability to record and edit and make sure these episodes came out. I thought I was going to do a fun little like, yeah, I'll record the intros and outros of the podcast in my hotel room with some friends and we'll recap the Sphere. My brain was broken. That place is crazy, okay? I didn't know how to be after the Sphere shows. And so yeah, I'm going to take my time on this. We're going to get these episodes out when we come back home. I'll do it from the actual office, aka my living room. And so that's where we're at. You are now going to listen to a conversation that Chris and I had well before the Sphere. And we talk about hopefully enjoying the Sphere. But rest assured, as you are listening to this this episode, Chris and I just had the time of our lives in Las Vegas at the Sphere, seeing Phish for that Friday show. But enough about that. Enough about our great show together. Let's listen to some of Chris's best shows that he's ever seen in his life, along with the craziest Phish story I've ever heard on this episode of Best Show Ever. But first, here's a little bit of music from none other than Loom with their song, What I Mean.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bruce.
And I'm Nolan. And this is the Corner of Gray Street podcast. As longtime Dave Matthews Band fans, we set out to create a podcast to dive deep into the past, present, and future of DMB.
Not only do we recap and review shows within an ongoing tour, but we revisit past shows from throughout the band's history, conduct interviews with a wide variety of guests with ties to DMB, and create unique and exclusive content like our Concerts on the Corner series.
Whether you're a fan of the band or just a fan of great music, we think you'll find something you'll enjoy. We can't wait to see you on the Corner of Gray Street.
Hey, what's up? My name's Lurk, and I'm the host of Lamb Goat's Van Flip podcast. Every week, I have in-depth conversations with bands from all over the scene, big and small. We also like to keep our finger on the pulse and showcase up-and-coming bands on the show as well. So come check out Lamb Goat's Van Flip podcast.
Well, yeah, man. What else has been up? Are you, you're still in LA? Are you guys about to head out or?
I'm still in LA. I think I'm going to be I know I'm going to be shooting season 3 of The Bear here in the coming months. So I haven't gotten my exact dates yet, but yeah, I'll probably go back to Chicago for a little while for that. So that'll be fun.
That rules. Just an excuse to go home. It's sweet. Nuts.
They put me up in the Viagra Triangle right across the street from Gibson's.
Oh, yeah.
and it's great. Just, you know, like the days that I'm not working, I can just like cruise around and see friends. And, you know, my parents are still out in the burbs. So grab dinner with them. And yeah, it's great.
The Viagra Triangle. That's exactly where my folks like, because my parents don't live in Illinois anymore. So when they would come visit me in Chicago, they would stay in that area, and I'm like, you got to know, like, this is the only time I'm in this part of the city ever is when you guys are in town.
The Gold Coast, for people who don't know, it's like very much like, I mean, they literally call it the Viagra Triangle because there's this like little section where the streets, you know, like intersect at a diagonal, and it's like all these like old Italian guys smoking cigars and playing dominoes and shit. It's hilarious.
It's always that scene. And it's like, that's where like the Gucci store is down there. And like, yeah, I'm like, he's like, you got all these great restaurants. I'm like, these are not the restaurants I'm going to in Chicago ever as an improviser one time ever.
It's like truly like mafia guys and like high-end escorts. And like, it's.
Yeah.
Not one
improv theater down there.
No, there's not. Which is a shame.
It's too bad. Those guys would love it. Those guys would love some long form improv.
Really slow pace.
Are the scenes on the show, is there any level of improv that you're doing on the in your scenes in the show? Or
there is, yeah. The creator Chris Storer is like pretty like improv friendly. And so I mean, because it's more of a dramedy, like you kind of have to stick to the script more than you would on a comedy, but he definitely lets me kind of play with it. And some of this, there's that, for people who have watched it in season 2, there's like this Christmas flashback episode.
Yeah.
And my character comes in with a tuna casserole, and a lot of those lines, like when I first come in, were improvised, and that was funny. So like play with like Bob Odenkirk is one of the characters. And so he and I were improvising a bunch of shit together. It was fun.
Yeah. Just some phenomenal improv people in the room for that. And so I'm sure that yielded some great stuff outside of what we got to see, which was awesome. That episode is like one of the best episodes of television that, I mean, I've ever seen, man. It was incredible.
It's triggering. It was triggering when we were filming. Like,
yeah.
Because even in between takes, like, a lot of those people are like very serious, you know, almost like methody actors. And so even in between takes, it's like still the room was very tense and like just sitting there in silence.
Oh man. Yeah. I can only, I mean, just watching it, there's like, you know, not a word said in my house as we're watching the episode. And so,
yeah,
as you're sitting in between those takes, yeah, that had to be crazy. Well, I mean, and I would love, listen, I would love to talk to you about acting for this entire episode, but that's your other podcast.
That's your acting podcast.
Yeah. Best show ever. Best show ever. It's about the Bear. And I break down the episodes, and you won't come on that podcast, but you'll do this one, which is great. Yeah. We're going to talk about, you're also a prolific concert goer. I've seen you at shows. People have seen you out at shows. You're a huge fan of live music. And so we're going to talk about some of the concerts that you've been to today instead.
Can't wait, bro. And you know what I did just for you? This morning, I woke up, had my coffee, and I went out into my garage where I have large Tupperware bins, and one of them is marked keepsakes, and I busted out my old ticket album.
Whoa.
Okay. And I have like shoe boxes full of ticket stubs that this morning I like went through and kind of like sorted, and like it brought back all these memories and stuff. So I've got a lot to talk about here, bro.
Dude, that's great. And for kids listening, you used to get what's called a ticket stub.
That's right.
And it would then live in a physical wallet that's a big binder that he just held up, not just a little Apple wallet in your phone. So.
That's right. And you didn't get your ticket scanned. They ripped the ticket. They ripped one part of the ticket off.
Yeah.
And handed the other part back to you. And the tickets cost like $25 back in the day.
And then they'd rip it in half, and you'd hope that you keep like a really decent half of it, or it's like a cool rip. Then for a while, they'd let you keep the stubs. You're like, you're not going to rip the stub, or I just get to keep the...
Right.
Okay, cool.
Right.
That was called scanning.
That was it.
Now we do that on your phone.
I was seriously looking at some of the prices on these old, like, you know, early 90s shows. And The Sphere package just hit my the Las Vegas Sphere package just hit my credit card, and yeah. I'm like, what the fuck ever happened to the days where you could see Phish for $25?
Not happening.
Wild.
Not happening. No, and like, you know, everything at the United Center would be like, you could go for $20. You can't go to the United Center for $20. That's not for any show at all. Not going to happen.
It's impossible.
Man. Speaking of back in the day, though, what was the first concert you ever saw in your life?
Okay. So going back even a little bit before this, so I feel very fortunate that my dad was a huge and still is a huge music guy. And he had a record album collection that played a huge influence in my entire life as I look back on it. So my dad would like crank tunes like all throughout the house, like all the time. And this morning I was kind of thinking about like, what were some of the like bands that really stuck out and shaped me. And so I made a little list here. So my dad's record album, these were kind of like the big hits, like the big, like his main, you know, bands where he had multiple. So he had tons of Rolling Stones albums, tons of Led Zeppelin, Pink Floyd, Fleetwood Mac, Genesis, tons of Genesis my dad had. He had Journey. He had a lot of Rush albums.
Nice.
But then this is leading to my first concert, and I remember how it came about. I have a vivid memory of getting my braces tightened at my orthodontist, and he had the Chicago radio playing, you know, like in his office, and I'm getting my braces tightened, and I hear them say over the radio that Jethro Tull and Emerson, Lake and Palmer are coming to town for a concert. And my dad was also had Jethro Tull albums and Emerson, Lake and Palmer albums that he would crank, you know, like Saturday morning, Sunday morning in the house. Yes. So I remember going home and telling my dad, Jethro Tull and Emerson, Lake and Palmer are coming to the New World Music Theater in Tinley Park, Illinois. We got to go. And he bought tickets and took me. We had really close seats, like fourth row or something. And Dang. So that was my first concert ever with my dad.
Man, and that is just like, he has got to be so proud of you coming home, being like, right? Guess who's coming? That's right? A cool cut. You know, it's not anyone. Those are two totally. Cool bands.
Totally. For and a kid especially, to come home. Especially Emerson, Lake and Palmer, like, I look like prog rock. Like, my dad raised me on a lot of like prog rock with Genesis and ELP. And I think it was like the perfect gateway into Phish. Like, yeah. the more that I think about it, like, cause it's like improv and like very kind of jammy and like very explorative and like going on the, you know, these long ass songs. And so, yeah, that was my first concert. I have great memories of being there with my dad and like bonding over it. And I think music in general is a huge thing that music and comedy were the two things that I bonded with my dad over the most, and just great memories of it.
Yeah. And those are like high concept bands that are doing like, yeah, like really deeply composed stuff and like really weird concepts for the lyrics and all that kind of totally. Stuff. And so, yeah. And that is like, when you're getting into that, when you're, you know, 10, 11, 12, like you are just getting into that because your dad thinks it's cool. There's no one at school oh. that's like, whoa, you like Emerson, Lake and Palmer? Like, no one, you know, none of the girls think that's a cool thing.
Right.
Like that is just a connection with dad type band.
Yes. You know, and it, that you're even, getting into. It even influenced, like, I realize he like gave me such a solid base in like classic rock, such a solid foundation that I never liked like pop music. Like I never liked, you know, the, what was popular at the time, what was like playing on the pop radios. Cause I was like, no, like Led Zeppelin, like Pink Floyd. Like, why are we listening to fucking Hanson? Like what?
Yeah. What? Or like, yeah, people are like going into like Breaking Benjamin and like Chevelle and stuff like that. And like, I was just like, it's weak, man. Yes, that's weak rock and roll.
Totally.
When you guys are missing it.
Yeah.
You got to go see these 70-year-old guys with me and my dad.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The show's rip.
Yeah. So that was my first. And then after that, it really like I had such a great time at that concert that I was like, then I became like the concert guy. Like whenever I was constantly searching for who was coming to town to the Chicagoland area. And then like I for like middle school and high school would go to as many concerts as I possibly could. And like, you know, work jobs to save up money to be able to go. And so this ticket album right here is like, I was looking through it. It's crazy. Like this, some of the stuff I saw, hold on, let me read off a couple here. Okay. Steve Miller Band. Styx. This is 1997. Styx. Santana. The Who. The Rolling Stones. Fleetwood Mac. Eric Clapton. Jimmy Page and Robert Plant.
Dang.
On June 16th, 1998 at the United Center.
Man.
Isn't that great?
That is great. I mean, yeah. That's just like, yeah, that's, you're seeing some of the best music ever made. Some of the last times they're going to tour it, you know?
Right.
Some of them will tour it for the last time 100 times. But I mean, that was like,
totally.
Yeah, that's sick. That's what it's all about, man.
Cool. And looking back, like cool of my parents to like see that, like, this is something that I love and they totally supported it. You know, like they'd take me to the concerts or go with me or like, you know, shuttle my friends down there and stuff. And like, I think they really saw that it like was something that was bringing me a lot of joy and like they totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think parents can probably recognize that it's not like a bad thing, that you're not out there like, you know, doing bad stuff. I think that they're like, my parents ran a pretty tight ship in our house, but they were cool with live music because they knew like that was something that they introduced to me. So they're like, you can't tell them no now. Like we were taking them to shows. So, yeah. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other one funny thing about this Ticket album is then, I mean, it's like Bruce Springsteen. It's like, you know, Bob Dylan. But then like in the middle of this Ticket book, it like makes a very clear shift to like, then it's like Fish. And then, and then Mo, String Cheese Incident, Widespread Panic, Fish.
Those pages smell a little different.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That's starting getting into your own music. Yeah. And that's like when you start really kind of cracking into some shows and like seeing stuff that you're not so sure about. Was there ever a worst show that you ever saw? Like a worst concert you ever went to back in those days?
All right. So I wrote down a couple now. this first one is not bad because of the concert. In fact, the concert was great. The performance was great, but check this out. Bela Fleck and the Flecktones on September 11th, 2001.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Tough vibe.
At the University of Iowa, I was a freshman in college and had tickets to see Bela Fleck and the Flecktones that night in the Memorial Union Hall or whatever the hell. And I was walking to American history class when somebody stopped me like on the steps headed towards the like quad at our school and said, did you just hear what happened in New York? And I was like, no, what the fuck? And they were, you know, like, go find a TV. And I like went to the student union and we're all like huddled around the TV watching like the towers, like,
yeah.
billowing with smoke. So
shit,
so fucking crazy. And then it's like, is he still going to do the show? And I apparently they were like, we should still do the show, you know, just to like keep some kind of normalcy and like, you know, so we can like all come together and like be together. And they opened the show with Amazing Grace. And I remember just like the audience was like, we still were trying to make sense of what the fuck happened. And like,
yeah,
it's crazy. But this like beautiful show. And I'll never forget it. It was like, I thought it was really cool that they actually went on with it.
Yeah. What a crazy performance. Yeah. And like, I mean, yeah. What are you supposed to do? Like,
Right.
How are you supposed to address that on that day? Yeah. It was just crazy. I mean, oh, dude.
No, well, but there was something about just like the music, like bringing us all together and like all these like kind of shocked and stunned people standing there. But like, it felt good to like be together in a big group and listen to this music and like feel like, oh, we're all like in this together. And like, you know, it was, never forget it.
Yeah. Something to focus on and something to have for a little while, because you know like the reality of it is still waiting for you after the concert's over or the next day or all that. I mean, it was just all on the news. I mean, it was on the news so you just like have like that night just to be like,
yeah,
I guess this is gonna help us process it. Weird tone
for a show.
Strange tone.
It was but I mean, so looking back, it was actually like a really powerful show, but worst. So that it's more worst day, but still a great show.
Yeah, right. Tough day. Worst day ever.
Yeah.
Other tough shows.
Okay, I was at, and I have the ticket stub right here. The first Bonnaroo.
Whoa!
See that? First
$100.
$100. Yep. Which was expensive back then. June 21, 22, 23, 2002.
Okay.
Damn. And so this entire fest was actually awesome, but Trey played with Tab that night. And this is when Trey was like not in a good place. Like, was like, you know, fucked up.
Tough days.
And I remember standing in the field with those thousands and thousands of people. And I remember I was on a certain psychedelic that
right
that you tend to take when you're, you know, going to these concerts. And I was, you know, 2002, so I graduated high school in 2001, so this was like freshman year of college. And Gray was, I remember, like not in a, you know, they were playing and it was fun and everything, but like you could tell that he was like messed up and kind of slurring, you know, slurring the words when he's singing. And like he did this whole acoustic encore where he played Wilson and like gave this whole long, like rambling speech about live music. And he like declared himself Wilson while he was playing it. He went, dun-it, dun-it. And then he went, I am. And then everybody goes, Wilson. I remember like not having a great time. I was like, man, Trey is like, you know, on the wrong path and like clearly like not winning the battle here. And yeah, it brought me to this dark place. But I realize now, I think I was projecting his shit onto me because I was like drinking my ass off back then. And
yeah,
it's kind of like the first, I've now I quit drinking and I'm coming up on 10 years, you know.
Wow.
Off Congrats. Of alcohol. Thanks. But I mean, I think like that night might have like planted some seeds for me. I mean, I didn't end up stopping until I was 30 years old, but I think that night like planted some seeds where I was like, oh, like if you stay on this path, things aren't going to like end well, you know? And
yeah, dude. And that's, I mean, that's part of the example that gets set, you know, it's like that has to be, you have to be seen in those, you don't have to be seen in those moments, but you are seen in those moments. And then when you are, you know, he's in such this great place now for like, I mean, 20 years or something now, he's been such a good place. But like, yeah, I mean, that, I'm sure that that's part of the like, oh, I can't let that happen, you know,
totally, to me. Totally. It was kind of a reflection of like, oh shit. Like if I stay on this path, and so then like Trey was a huge inspiration for me, like seeing him like hit rock bottom, but then like turn it around and get his shit together. He was really like a huge influence on me, for my own, like, you know, journey. And, so yeah, so that night I remember it was almost like evil vibes. I was like, oh, yeah, this is dark. And like, there's a like cynical vibe happening. And I remember he even then like addressed it, afterwards where he was like, oh, I took too many drugs at Bonnaroo.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It wasn't good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's tough, especially because he's someone who's like clearly already been set up at that point as like a hero to you. You've seen him live a bunch of times. So there's that level of like, even that guy, you know, can get to this really tough place, this really bad, or he can be out of control in some way. Oh. And that's, yeah, that's tough to watch. It's tough to watch an artist like too fucked up to perform, you know, yes. Especially if it's someone who you're like a huge, huge fan of, you know. Oh. It's like, oh, bummer.
Oh. I think too that, like, you know, I mentioned there's those specific psychedelics. I think they kind of show you stuff that, you know, sometimes you don't want to see, you know.
Yeah.
They show you what you need to see. And I think that night was like, oh shit, it kind of was like showing me like, it's kind of like you peek behind the curtain a little bit and oh, if you stay on this path, things could, you know, end up not great. And so, yeah, that was definitely part of it too.
Little ghosts of Christmas future.
That's
during
right.
The Trey show.
Yes, that's right.
Well, you know, sounds like you've been to some pretty sick shows, a whole bunch of them. And it's hard to pick your best show. So is there a group of honorable mentions that you'd be remiss if you didn't bring up?
There are.
Honorable mention type shows?
There are honorable mention type shows. So whenever anybody asks me this question, I have kind of a surprising answer because they're not my favorite band at all. In fact, I've like made fun of them over the years. but my dad and cousins took me to see on June 28th, 1997, the U2 Pop Mart show at Soldier Field. And it was such a spectacle. Like, they had this gigantic, like, video screen and all this, like, all these theatrics and shit. And, like, just was, like, truly an overwhelming, like, experience to, like, your senses. And so whenever anybody asks what's your favorite concert ever, I say, like, because it was such a crazy spectacle, the U2 Pop Mart tour.
And I, before we even hit record, also made fun of U2 on this.
Yes.
And you were a little like, how do you know? Did you know? I was going to talk about
you. They're easy to make fun of. You know?
Easy to make fun of. But totally. I mean, incredible live performance.
Look at what they're kinda doing. Like, look at what they're doing at the Sphere right now. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah.
They are a band who, like, easy to make fun of, but also, like, have been doing cool shit for so long.
They set up those, like, mega concerts that now, like, you know, like Coldplay and Taylor Swift and, like, these kind of acts. Like, U2 was doing that in the 90s, you know, with these massive, massive production, you know, shows that they're putting on, you know?
I mean, you saw the picture of Trey at the show, like, with his jaw open, like, at the Sphere show, you know, like, look at which, I mean, I was able to score tickets for the Sphere. I know you did too.
Yeah.
But I'm, like, so interested in what they're going to do there. And I think about it, like, every day. Like, every day, I'm like, what are they going to do?
I also think about it all the time. Because I'm usually good with the lights. The lights usually blow me away. So, I mean, and that's not nearly what the fucking massive screen is, you know? So
is it maybe they're just going to set up the light rig in there and, like, project the lights up onto the, I don't know.
I don't know, man. Yeah. I don't know, but I know it's
going to be a Windows 95 screensaver just bouncing around on the screen.
Yeah. We're going to be like, yeah, when it hits a corner, but it's not a corner. It's a sphere, man. Where is it going to go?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's crazy. It's such a, like, there's so much they can do with that with the sphere. Like, they can target sound and they can, like, change the temperature in there really quick. And they can do all this weird stuff. I wonder, like, how much of it is going to be at their disposal. But they wouldn't be doing it if they couldn't, like, you know, put on, like, the coolest show ever, you know?
Agreed. This year, I decided, I was like, I'm going to skip, New Year's at Madison Square Garden, and I'm going to skip Mexico in favor of the Sphere and the Delaware Fest, Monday Green.
Yeah, that's right.
But it was funny because I was saying to a friend, I'm like, what could they possibly do on New Year's Eve? They're not going to, what are they going to do? Aliens? Like, we're not going to miss anything. And then then, of course, Couch Tour, and I'm like, oh, they're fucking doing Game Henge.
They're really fucking doing Game Henge, huh? Yeah. Wow.
Cool. That was cool, though. Did you watch it? Did you Couch Tour?
Yeah. I Couch Toured, and then I gave it, like, a week, and then I watched the re-filming of it. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, it was really fucking cool. And all of my friends who were there are like, it was cool. You know, it's not like, it wasn't that cool. Like, don't worry. I'm like, shut the fuck up. Shut up, dude.
I know. Anyone who went to that show, they're going to hold it over our heads for the rest of our lives.
Yeah. In, like, a weird, like, subtle, because we know how bad it is. Like, they're going to, like, only pull it out at certain moments and it's going to suck. But we missed basically Big Cypress of 3.0, which is fine, but that's okay. We're going to do.
Okay. We'll be at this beer and then we can hold that over people's heads.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Sitting down at the Sphere.
Look at this, bro. Look at this. This is 2003. Look at this ticket book here.
Man.
Look at that. And then I got, so those are fish ticks from summer tour 2003. And then look at this. These are all fish tickets for the most part.
There's Magna Ball in there. Yeah. Look at all of them. I mean, that's nuts.
So were you, how were you getting to show to show? Were you going on the full tour? Were you like hitting just a certain number of spots in those days, or like, how were you getting around?
So that brings me to my second favorite show of all time.
Yeah.
And that was my first Phish show, which was 1997. It was August 8th, 1997 at the New World Music Theater outside of Chicago.
Wow.
And I think I went with like older kids, you know, like who were able to like drive us there. Cause I know my parents didn't drive us. But I had been listening to Phish a lot before before that. My first thing I really got album I really got into was Alive One.
Yeah.
And then Hoist and then Rift and then, you know, how then the whole catalog. And then I was trading tapes and trying to, but
yeah.
First show was 97 and they opened with Cars, Trucks, Buses.
Wow. Great opener in that time.
Great opener. And then they played Lizards and they played Loving Cup and they played Limb by Limb. But I remember specifically Lizards was what really, like, in the middle of Lizards where it's like, you know, dun, 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 dun. Yeah, like in that moment, I was like, oh my God, this is what I've been searching for. This is my fucking band. And like, it like hooked me. Like I just knew like, oh my God, this is like, I'm going to love this band for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of those parts of like one of those big pieces. That's just like, you know, an automatic, you bring a buddy for a first time to a show. You're like, oh, here we go. You're about to get hooked right now. You know, it's like the Hood Jam or Reba or like, you know, it's just like just one of those parts where you're just like pulled in, you know?
Yep. Yep. So that was it. I mean, I think that it was just like such a kind of game changer night in my life that like I look back, I don't have like these super specific memories of it because it was, you know, I'm sure like, I mean, it was 1997 and I'm sure I was on some kind of, I'm sure I was overserved or whatever, but like, I definitely put that up there as like one of the greatest nights of my life. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a different show than you've ever seen before. You know, you've never seen anything like that. And it sounds like you've seen all these other great presentations of music that if you would have gone to the Cincinnati stop, it would have been the same show.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And all of a sudden it's this brand new thing. Yeah.
And looking back on it too now, and you know, in the Phish, like on the forums and stuff, when people talk about like what was the best year ever, so many people say 1997 summer tour, and so to be able to get to see them for the first time during that tour was special for me.
Yeah, it's like their peak, you know, their general peak that everyone consensus is like that's the peak. So pretty awesome time to have seen them.
Yeah. So then I would like do little, when they would, I would do like all the Midwest shows. So I would do like Alpine, Deer Creek, Ohio. So there were some summers where I like did, I didn't like go full on tour. I didn't like fully become a Wook, but was like definitely like trying to see as many as I could when they were in my area.
Regional Wook.
Regional. Yes. I was a regional Wook.
Yeah.
And that was, yeah, my college buddies, I like my best friend who I met on the first day of college, Mitch Ridner. We both had Phish t-shirts on like at college orientation and immediately went up to him and like we've been best friends.
Nice shirt, bro.
Yeah, exactly.
Sick shirt.
Yeah, sick shirt. Exactly. Mitch now, Mitch used to like DJ all of our like parties in college, like fraternity parties and all these like. And now cut to Mitch, like, is one of the go-to like Phish after party DJs. He and this guy Airwolf like play tons of after shows and stuff. They just did a great one for the Chicago shows. And I'm very proud of him. He DJed after Mexico last year, like poolside, and has just been killing it. We have Phish to thank for our friendship. So
that's, yeah, it's brought together so many of me and my buddies as well, which is just a cool
thing. But yeah, when you see that dude in a fish shirt, you got to say, what's up?
Yeah.
What's up, dude? Cool Don't shirt.
Give the knowing nod. Yeah.
Deer Creek shirt. Cool. You're
very cool. Very cool. Got the Alpine going.
Very nice. Very sick. Wow. So then that was the first show. Do you have a best show? Do you have a best fish show that you've ever seen?
So, okay. Well, then that brings me to Chicago, July 21st, 2013. And this is a whole story that I'll give you the abbreviated version of. But so when Fish did the Harpua prank, I was the first guy up on stage for that whole thing.
I had a feeling we'd be talking about this today.
And yeah. So this is it's funny because at Fish shows, like, occasionally people will come up to me and they'll be like, "Oh, you're from The Bear or that show Love on Netflix," but more often it's, "You're the dude from the Harpua." You're the dude from the Chicago Harpua.
Yes, you are.
Yeah. So I performed and worked at the Second City Theater in Chicago for many years. It was my dream ever since my dad took me to see a show there when I was 13 years old. And so I, you know, worked my way, cut my teeth in the Chicago improv scene like you did, and worked my way up to work on the stage at Second City. And so one night, it was in the main stage theater, I get a text from my friends who are in the cast, and they said, because I was on the ETC stage, which was next door, they said, "You got to get over here. Mike Gordon is in the audience. So, like, get your ass over here right now."
Insane.
And so I lived like two blocks from the theaters in Old Town. So I, like, you know, go bounding out of my door and run down the street. And sure enough, there's Gordo sitting in the audience because he had a night off before the Chicago run, which was three shows at Northerly Island.
Yep.
Again, this is 2013. So at Second City, there's like the first act and the second act, which is like the main sketch comedy show. But then there's always this third act, which is called the improv set. And so they go out and ask Mike if he wants to join us on stage for the improv set. And so he says, of course. And, you know, you can tell that he, like, appreciates this place, you know, like, you could tell that he understands that, like, Second City is a cool thing. And, you know, you see all the famous alumni pictures on the walls and stuff. And so he comes backstage and we decide that he's going to go out on stage and tell stories about, like, his life and being a rock star. And then we're going to, like, improvise scenes about his stories.
Yeah.
So sure enough, we do it, and Mike is hilarious. He's telling all these, like, great stories about, like, life on the road and da da da. And then we, like, improvise scenes based on his stories, and, you know, it's all accompanied with music and stuff. And so it's just like a great night, and you can tell he, like, had a blast, and
he's doing good monologues.
Yeah, he was great. He was, like, really funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was funny though because it was only me and, like, two other people in this Second City group, like, knew what Fish was. You know, like, the other people had no fucking idea.
That's such a great dynamic because some of the performers are like, "I don't even fucking, totally. I have no idea." And then the other people are like, "Oh my God, it's fucking Mike.
He's here. He's in front of us." Yeah. So anyway, then we, like, hang out with him after the show and, like, go out to a bar and blah, blah, blah. And he, like, you can tell he's, like, having fun. And so he was like, "Hey, why don't you guys come to soundcheck the next day? And, like, we can show you, like, what the vibe is like." And so I, like, can't fucking believe it.
Yeah.
So,
right.
So
dream.
So I then, of course, like, reach out and I'm like, "Can I get a soundcheck? Can I get a pass for my sister and my best friend Mitch too?" And they're like, "Sure, we got you, man." So, and here, look, I found look at this. This is the Fish.
There they are.
Wow. Backstage pass, sound check pass. Came in this envelope, this official Fish envelope.
Wow.
I spelled my last name wrong. And so we go to sound check. Like, I'm, like, beside myself. Like, we're standing on stage. Trey is, like, giving us a rig rundown. Like, you know, those like videos where, that he posts of like his rig rundown. So he essentially like gave us a private version of that.
Oh, the best.
The best. Like, we're like holding Mike's bass and like.
So sick.
So cool. And so then they're like, great. Well, we'll get you guys, you know, tickets for the show tonight and you can hang out backstage. And like, so we go and meet them and we have dinner with them backstage.
Oh my God. Just a dream evening.
Like, I brought them Second City has like this really cool coffee table book that's like the history of Second City. And I got four of them like from the theater and brought them and gave them to the guys as gifts, you know, like, and they loved it and they're looking through it. We even talked to, like, we explained to Trey, me and my friend Katie Rich, who's also a Fish fan, explained to the band like the improv philosophy of yes and how, like, in improv you like sit, you know, someone offers up something in an improv scene and you say yes to it, you agree to it, and then you add something to it, so you say yes and Trey, I remember Trey was like, that's exactly what we do, like,
yeah, it is, dude.
Where would you think? Like Paige plays something and I go, yes, Paige, and then I add to it, and he's like, that's the whole philosophy. It's like, that's our whole philosophy.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, Trey. Exactly, dude. You've always gotten it.
Totally. And so I'm just like truly a pig in shit. Like, couldn't believe it. So then that night after the concert, Mike and now Fishman go back to Second City, and they bring Dan Cantor, who's the guitar player for Justin Bieber, who is a huge Fish fan.
Yep.
So then they do the improv set again at Second City. We set up a little drum kit for Fish. Mike has his bass. We find a guitar for Dan Cantor, and we do an entire like hybrid jam music, like jam improv set where they're like underscoring improv scenes.
This is just like, this only happens when I fall asleep at night. Right? This kind of stuff. this kind of stuff. Yeah.
We then go out that night again with Fishman and Mike, and like I take him to the Old Town Ale House, and like
a classic.
Fishman's like a history buff, which I didn't realize. And so like till like 4 a.m, I'm sitting there with Fishman and he's like giving me history lessons on like Genghis Khan and like all this crazy shit.
And you're surrounded by the crazy art, and the Old Town Ale House has got the craziest art you've ever seen. You can look it up. It's yes. Easy to find on the internet. Yeah.
A lot of nudity. It's wild.
Mostly nudity.
Yes. So we go back to soundcheck. And again, Cam, I'm like, you know, I'm this might not be like totally perfectly verbatim how it happened, but I'm like, it's as I remember it. We go to soundcheck again, and Mitch, my best friend, comes up with this idea where he's like, you know, you guys haven't played Harpua in a long time. And Trey goes, well, yeah, we haven't played in a long time because I fucking hate having to tell that story. You know, like,
yeah, right.
I hate having to like come up with this whole story about Jimmy and, you know, and poster nutbag and all this shit. And so Mitch is like, you know, what you guys should do tonight is you should like, do a collaboration where like you pull these guys up on stage and they tell the story of Harpua for you, like as an improv scene, and they like act it out and da da da. And so Trey is like, oh my God, we should do it. Let's do it. and Mike's like describing to Trey like the improv set at Second City, you know, because Trey never came to Second City. So
yeah.
He's like, yeah, they could like come on stage and like do this whole long form improv thing where they're like, so we're like,
they're yes-anding the idea.
Yeah. And so they're like, all right, let's do it. And so we kind of like, we went backstage and kind of planned out how it was going to go. And like, I was going to hold up a sign in the front row that says poster nutbag the right way. And essentially like during the concert, Trey's going to be playing and then he's going to see me and be like, hey man, what, you know, what's with the sign? And then I yell out like, you're doing it the wrong way. You're not telling the story the proper way. I know how to tell the story. And so Trey's then like, oh, you think you're so great? All right, why don't you come up here and tell the story?
leaving 40,000 people being like, why is that guy going up there?
Dude, so what a lot of people forget also is there was a torrential downpour during this show.
Yeah.
Where they had to stop the show because of the rain, like postpone, and where they had to like go off stage. And I remember standing in the front row and there was like water, like up to my ankle, like shoes fully drenched. Like, and I remember thinking like, oh, well, we're not going to like do this thing anymore because like, this is crazy. Like, it's like, we're getting, there's like a huge storm coming in and like the show's going to be canceled and blah, blah, blah. And I remember going backstage and Trey like came up to us and he's like, all right, it looks like the storm's going to pass. We're still doing this. Like we're doing it. Like we're full on, we're doing it. We're doing it. And I remember feeling these doubts of like, are you, I don't know. Like, is this really a good idea? Like, I don't know how that, like I'm comfortable improvising at the theater at Second City, you know, in front of 300 people, but like, I don't know how this is going to go over exactly, or this is going to work like on stage in a concert setting. So anyway, sure enough, like they go back on, like the, you know, the storm passes, they go back on, they're playing. And all of a sudden it gets to the part where I'm like holding up the sign and Trey like points at me and he's like, all right, you think you're so great? Come up on stage. And I'll never forget, dude. I like, I like hop this fence and I like get, you know, helped up on stage and my back is to the crowd. And then all of a sudden I like turn around and look, and there's fucking 40,000 people staring at me.
There really is. There really is 40,000 people up there.
And there was excitement. There was this excitement because the crowd was like truly like, what the fuck is happening here? Like, who's this guy? Da, 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 da.
Yeah.
So I had, dude, I haven't, it's on YouTube. I like haven't, I refuse to watch it because I'm like, I'm so like, it's cringe. It kind of like, so I like start telling some story into the microphone and then I like invite the rest of the cast up on stage. And so all of a sudden like, there's this cast, but they have no idea like any fish lore, you know? And so we like start doing like a weird improv scene, I guess. And then somebody's like rapping. And then all of a sudden, like from the crowd, I start hearing like, what the fuck is this? Like, boo.
Oh no, no. No.
Yeah. And I remember thinking like, oh no, this like isn't going, this is not going well. And this is not like, you know, something like this at Second City, you know, like would, you're in your comfort zone and like, you know,
would be played off by the MD.
And then
it's over.
But all of a sudden, like the crowd is booing and like, it kind of just like turned into this, like, who knows what the fuck it was, this shit show of like improv and da, 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 da. And then finally, I think Trey was like, okay, I'll take it from here. And like, Mike ends up telling the Harpua story or whatever. Well, we're like escorted off the stage.
Oh, Jesus.
But I mean, it was for your podcast. It was truly the best show of my life, but then also kind of the worst show because I'm like, get on stage, getting booed.
The experience that you got to have with the band throughout that weekend is something that like, for me, like as an improviser, guy who did Second City stuff, you know, you're going through improv and you're also a huge Fish fan. You're just like, oh my God, I want to talk to these guys about improv. And so getting that opportunity is incredible. And all they did was just keep being stoked about it and invite you guys on stage.
Yeah.
And when you're going through improv in Chicago, you know, your buddies from home or like your family members or like everybody that you're always with all the time, especially like in the era I was going through it, we're like, let's see some videos of it or let's do some improv right now. Or like, dude, and it's like, well, the context is a little, you know, you gotta have, it's gotta be in the room and, you know, improv is done in tight spaces where everyone's close together. It's not there's never a show at Tinley Park.
Right.
Right. You know, like, it wouldn't go down so smooth at Alpine Valley, you know, like it's
Totally.
You know, what was I going to do? Say no to this? Like, oh no, I don't think it's good. Like, yeah.
Nah, Trey.
Yeah.
I'm saying no to that. Right. Yeah. After I just taught you about yes and, I'm saying no, cause that's going to suck. No, it's, I mean it. And you know, you gotta let people know that they're about to see improv. You get it. Yes,
and, totally. There has to be some kind of like context or setup or something, or like, yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember like it happened and I was like, okay. Like it was just like all of a sudden I was like off the stage and was kind of like, what the fuck just happened? But then all these people are like, you know, pat me on the back. Yeah. Holy shit, man. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Was, like walking out of the concert, it was like, people were like, that's the dude who was up there. Blah, blah, blah. And, but then the funny, I remember like the next day on like fish.net or whatever, there was like this scathing review of like, it was like the title was like an unfortunate troop or something like that. And I was like, oh no,
oh,
like
God.
Some, you know, one of these fish nerds just like tearing it apart. But then also on like Reddit and shit, I remember, or like the forums, people like picking it apart and like trying to like put meaning to it. And they were like, no, what it really was the band was trying to tell the audience that they're sick of people holding up signs and acting like they know what's best. And so it was all part of this elaborate, you know.
They're setting up Halloween, dude.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The she said that she rapped and they're going to do an NWA album.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, dude. I mean, that had to be pretty crazy to be a part of, like the conversation of what's happening with the band. But yeah, it's like, you know, you don't ask for the nerds to destroy your stuff.
Oh, yeah. Throw it.
It's yeah. Oh man. Well, I mean, there's so few people that have shared that space with those guys, and you are one of them. And that's just a crazy, crazy thing to have done.
Well, thank you. It was truly one of the wildest like weekends of my life. And I look back on it, like I look back on it really fondly, but also there's some trauma attached to it that I think back and I'm, but you know, the thing is like, of course it wasn't going to go well. Like looking back, I'm like, oh yeah, dude, like you should have known that. Like, you're not, there's like a very slim chance that you're going to get up on stage and like knock it out of the park doing an improv scene in front of 40,000 people.
Yeah. With eight people. I mean like shit.
Yeah. Like drenched in water from the storm and like, yeah. So like, it's easy to play Monday morning quarterback with it, but still like it was so cool.
And there is, yeah, there are just few instances where that would ever even come to happen. And so all these perfect things had to happen where they're, you know, being inspired by improv, they do well at Second City. Like you guys have these really cool experiences, like, you know, that's not just going to happen out of nowhere. And so it was a perfect storm, a literal storm that took away the show, but a perfect storm that like led to that happening. And I mean, I've talked about it on other podcasts just because I'm like a guy who does improv and likes Fish, just because it is one of the most interesting things that's ever happened on stage for Fish, especially if you are an improv or comedy person. Like, you know, yeah. Second City took the stage with Fish. I mean, for me, that's like, those are my two niches
colliding
together, you know? Yeah. It's just a crazy thing that ended up happening.
And now, they finally got to do Harpua the right way this year on New Year's. So there you go. It was all leading up to that.
Yeah. And they got crumping lizards, and that was a little more the vibe for the audience, I guess.
That's right.
They wanted the crumping lizards. Yeah.
We needed, we didn't have any animal costumes like the fucking Lion King live performance.
So I think wearing something that maybe accentuated your butt cheeks a little bit more would have been really helpful. The crowd seemed to love that.
It would help.
That's what got picked apart the next day.
But I do have some great pictures from that of me on stage that you'll have to share in the podcast here, because there's one picture of me like I'm like on stage with a big dumb shit-eating grin on my face, and Trey's looking at me smiling, and like I'll have that forever.
Oh yeah. You'll have, and no one can take that from you. That's a, I mean, what a picture to have on stage. And you were supposed to be on stage. You weren't streaking.
Yeah, I wasn't.
you were invited legitimately.
Exactly.
You could have that picture too.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Wow. Well, I mean, I know you've got a bunch of filming coming up very soon here, but do you have any shows that you're going to this year, anything live music wise that you're looking forward to, other than obviously the Sphere that we've talked about?
Yeah. So I bought my dad, as I said earlier, huge music guy. And I bought tickets for my whole family to see the Rolling Stones at SoFi Stadium in July. So I'm really looking forward to that, bringing my dad and mom and sister. And my dad's taken me to a handful of Stones shows over the years, and he saw them a handful of times, like in the 70s and stuff. And so It feels like, you know, this could potentially be their last tour. And, you know, it's just amazing that they're still going. And my dad and I, like I said, really bond over music and stuff. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, that should be a great time. And that's a crazy place to see a show. I mean, they pack so many people in that place.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
The Bears are talking about building a new stadium or whatever. And I remember being like, why are we building a new stadium? But then when I went to SoFi for the first time, I was like, oh, this, like, this is a stadium. Like, holy shit. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Little different setup than Soldier Field. And I get the appeal. Yeah. I want that for Chicago too. So, sick, man. We'll see you out there at those.
Yeah, buddy. I can't wait for the Sphere. And then I'm going to the Delaware Fest too. I know you are too. We're going to hang.
That's right. Got a big group going. Going to be camping outside, doing it old school 90s style. You can show us how to do it.
I can't wait. Well, you know, I've never actually been to an official fish festival. So this will be my first. So I'm excited.
Man. It feels like the way that it's meant to be presented. It feels like the fishiest weekend you can have. So I'm like, it's Sphere and that are the only two things I'm thinking about at any given moment. And so
same. I like too that they've really perfected, like, I think they've really perfected taking care of their fans. Like, I think they know that their fans are getting older and like want to have like the easiest experience possible. And it really hit me when I went to Mexico last year. I was like, oh my God, this is like, it's like fish summer camp. It's like so perfectly set up where, you know, it's like all inclusive and you walk to the show and then you walk to a pool party and then back to your room. And it just feels very like, it feels like they've really done a good job of like evolving and like taking good care of their fan base. Even with the, now you can like rent RVs on site at the festival. It's great. Yeah,
it's so great. It feels like when people talk about the original festivals, that it was like in that time that it felt like Fish had thought of everything, you know, that there were all these cool things that, you know, that were set up and like cool art and, you know, ways to communicate with people outside the festival and like that they had thought of everything. And they have definitely carried that through. And I've never done Mexico, but the people who have gone like swear by it. I mean, it's like they go every year after they go once. And so Mondo Green's going to be my first thing like that. I'm stoked. I can't wait, man.
It'll be great. It'll be so great. I also just want to say we are so lucky to be alive during this band, like being on Earth. Like,
yeah,
I think that like people who I've spent a lot of my life, I realized, trying to get people into Fish, like girlfriends and like people who just aren't. And I've tried to like, you got to like, come on, like come to a show. Da, 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 da. But now I've really gotten to the point where I'm like, I feel so fortunate to like get it and to like, to be able to have these, this experience with this band that now I'm almost like, stay like, if, yeah. Like, stay away. Like, right. this is our special thing. And if you don't get it, fine. Like, I'm not going to try to force it on you. Like, it's like this special thing that we have, you know?
It is totally that for me. And I, like, when I first moved out to LA, I started having to see shows with people who haven't ever seen Fish. And so I'm like bringing them along and like expecting them to get this like 20-year-long relationship I have with this band that I also have with like my older brother, and like all, you know, there's all these like things that make it what it is. And yeah, it's like, how, like, why would I try to explain that to someone? And like, I get so much out of those shows, you know, I mean, like, and then to expect like my buddy who's just like there to like smoke some pot with me to like get the same, I'm like,
yeah, right.
On the car ride home, trying to talk with him about it. He's like, oh, the Bowie thing was pretty sick, I guess. Or they covered Led Zeppelin. That was awesome. I'm like, yeah, but like,
but it totally,
it's like your life changed a little bit.
Totally.
No? All right.
It really, it like what you said about your brother, like my sister and I, she's a huge Fish fan. And it's really where we go to like reconnect, and like, you know, it's like our special thing that we like go and have this weekend together where we cruise around, and like, you know, she now knows more people than I do. And like, but I even explain it to people as like, for me, it's like I go and reconnect with, I call it like the mothership. Like you go and reconnect to the mothership, and it like, it kind of like charges you up for your life. Like, it's like this kind of like, oh yeah, this is what it's all about. And it really is like a spiritual thing.
Yeah.
And then like, I can go back into my normal life, but I'm like re-energized and like, yeah, it's really something magical about it.
Yeah. And I think that like being able to be in awe of something, or like to really be like taken by something, you know, or an experience, will then make things more fun and more palatable in your life. Like you're just doing what you do all the time. And it's kind of like, it becomes mundane, or it becomes work, or it becomes like not so great. And like in those shows, like, you know, you're trying to be like out of your head and enjoy the presentation of the music or whatever, but you're also like in your head thinking about like, you know what, like I got to look at more stuff the way I'm looking at this, you know, I got to like appreciate the way that, or whatever ends up creeping into your brain during those, you know, shows and stuff. And yeah, that it's the same experience for me every single time I see them, you know, I get a lot of juice.
Same.
From those shows.
Same. I think they know it too, but they really are, I think, like doing something special for humanity.
Yeah, true. I mean, and like for people who make stuff, like you get to watch like how much freedom they have on stage, and anyone who makes anything of any kind, like would love that sort of freedom and an audience that is like, you know, wants it so bad, or like is celebrates mistakes and things like that, you know, like they can make a mess if they want to, and it'll at least be heard. It might get picked apart on the internet, but they don't have to fucking read that, you know, like they can do whatever they'd like every night. And like, yeah, any band, artist, actor, comedian, anyone would like that sort of.
Totally. They're really tapping into something, like they're vibrating on this like much higher level that I think we're all looking for. We're all like aspiring to find that. And yeah, it's so great.
And then you show your girlfriend, you're like, all right, this is called Fluffhead. And she's like, are you fucking kidding me? You're like, no.
I know. It's so tough.
It's all the other stuff I just said. It is called Fluffhead. Whatever, dude.
I have another, just real quick, like worst show memory was like, I brought this woman I was dating, and like she didn't care, didn't give a shit about Fish at all. And we like, it somewhere in my head, because so many shows I like bop around, and I'm like going over here and going over here, and like,
yeah.
And I remember she was like, can we go to our seat, please? Like, I don't want to just be like dancing in the aisle here. And I'm like, don't worry about it. Like, follow me this way, and then we're going to sneak down here. Da, 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 da. And she's like, no, I want to go to the seats. And like, this is like, I'm nervous. Yeah. You're making me nervous.
The seat's not really, the seat is just a concept.
Totally. Yeah. And then we finally went to the seat. And of course, somebody's like in the seats, you know, and it's like down.
Yeah.
And I'm like trying to explain to her, like, no, you can just like cruise around and like go, you know, dance in the aisle here. And she's like, no, I don't want to. Like,
it's no cruising. I don't want to cruise. I want to sit.
Yeah.
Oh, so man. It is. I mean, that's the experience, for better or for worse. I love it. I love being able to bop around and move around. But some people are not down. They want their seat.
So, which I get too. Like, they want, like, they don't want some security guard to be giving them like bad looks or yelling at them and stuff. And so, like, if, like, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a little bit my dad's concert going mode, though. Like, we didn't sit in our seats. Like, we were like looking around for other seats. And so,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, unless we bought like really close seats, which was like few and far between. And then it was like, look at us in the nice seats. But like,
right.
It just felt like my dad was always like, I'm from Chicago. We're looking for different seats. Like, okay.
Cool. My dad always used to say, you got to walk in like you own the place.
Yeah. Yeah. So we're going to get in a fight with a guy. Awesome. That's going to be sweet.
But there's something like, you know, me and you have been to so many fish shows that we like, we know what the, we know how to navigate it. You know what I mean? But like,
yeah.
But a newbie to them, it's like, what the, like there's people spinning around and like, what the fuck is this? Like, yeah.
And like, if there is a guy in our seat, I'll know how to talk to the guy. It's going to be okay. Totally. Like, hey, these are ours, but you can hang.
Yeah, totally.
Sick. Sick, sick. Okay, so that was my conversation with Chris Witoski. Also a little bit of music from a band called Loom, their song, What I Mean. You guys, I cannot tell you how much of a dream it would be to have Fish tell my improv team that they should do the Harpua in Chicago at Northerly Isle. Because they talked with improv about, I mean, it is literally a dream scenario that Chris got to play out in that scenario. It's a crazy, crazy story. Of course it was going to be a difficult crowd to play to. You're not Fish. And that crowd of 40,000 people would prefer to see Fish. They truly would. Chris is the best guy, the nicest guy, such a Chicago Midwest dude. He has been unbelievably supportive of what I do. And it was a blast getting to see the best show I've ever seen with him. That's it for season two. Season two is out right now. If you've enjoyed it, thank you guys so much. I cannot tell you guys how much I appreciate the support that you have given this podcast, whether it's just through watching it, whether you've sent kind words or shared episodes with friends, or even if you've become a Patreon member and donated to the show, thank you guys so much. You're the reason why it's still happening, and you're the reason why there will absolutely be a season three. And I'm already in the works on that. We're going to try to get that out sooner than season two came out after season one, because this was just such a blast. I want to thank all the guests that came on, everyone who showed interest in being on the podcast. Thank you so much. And for all the folks who gave help and were able to, you know, usher in some very, very cool guests for the season. Thank you. Thank you so much. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you guys' support. And we're going to keep it rolling. We're going to keep this podcast rolling and hopefully have more best shows ever in the future. But until next time, guys, have a great show.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Hello out there!
Yes, we're out there, everyone. I'm Hal Schwartz.
And I'm Flynn McClain. Together we host None But the Brave, a podcast dedicated to the music and career of Bruce Springsteen.
Bruce and E Street Band are on tour right now for the first time in 6 years, and we're taking a detailed look at what's happening on stage in our bi-weekly episodes.
We've also been recently joined by some very exciting guests, including rock journalist Warren Zanes and Stephen Hayden, Backstreet's Magazine founder Charles Cross, and Barstool's Kirk Menahan.
If you're a diehard Springsteen fan, this is the show for you.
So please subscribe to None But the Brave on your favorite podcasting platform, and we hope to see you further on up the road.
Thank you so much! We'll be seeing you!